Welcome, and thank you for standing by. Today's call is being recorded. If you have any objections, you may disconnect at this time. All participants are in a listen-only mode until the question and answer session of today's agenda. To ask a question at a time, you may press star one and clearly record your name for question introduction. I would now like to turn the call over to your host, Melissa Gordon. Thank you.
Good afternoon, and thank you for joining our call today. My name is Melissa Gordon, and I'm a Public Information Officer for the Virginia Department of Health Office of Communications. Today, we are joined by State Vaccine Coordinator Dr. Danny Avula. She will give an update on the latest developments with the COVID-19 vaccine. Today's call is being moderated by an operator, so when we get to the Q&A part of the call, please follow their instructions to ask the question. Now, I'd like to welcome Dr. Avula to share a brief update.
Thanks, Melissa. Good afternoon, everybody. Where we start. So today, 1.243 million doses administered across Virginia. Continue to make good progress in adding new channels and are kind of in the same boat we were last week with a couple of new additions to the vaccination program. Our total first doses are up to about 130,000 first doses this week. And if you'll remember, 3 weeks ago, we were at about 105,000. So we have seen a steady, small percentage increase each week. We continue to really focus on the long-term care facilities that fall outside of the CVS Walgreens partnership, as well as some other priority populations that are centrally that we're distributing vaccine centrally to, like the Department of Corrections. And then the rest is going to localities primarily based on a population model. And I say primarily because there are still a few localities that have lower rates per 100,000 in terms of the number of people who've had vaccines administered, and so we're trying to help support vaccination events in those areas. You all also probably saw the release from this morning that as we prepare for the launch of our call center and our centralized pre-registration process next week, the pre-registrations that the various local health departments have been using will go into downtime this weekend. And so that's simply because we want to integrate all that data. We don't want to have multiple data streams sort of adding new data while we're merging it all into the centralized intake process. You know, and at the end of the day, you know, the lists are thousands of people long, and so, you know, hitting pause for a couple days won't significantly impact anybody's, you know, the timeline under which somebody would get vaccinated. The other addition, as we talked about at the end of last week, was CVS coming through the federal retail program. Today was the first day that they actually started giving vaccine, and as I understand it, they continue to open up new appointments on a rolling basis for those who are 65 and over across the state. And so 65 and over, about 26,000 new doses per week, so a really nice addition to the overall amount of vaccine coming into our community. Okay, so I'll stop there and see where the questions go.
Thank you, Dr. Avula. Before we begin the question and answer portion of today's call, I'd like to remind everyone that our call is focused on the latest developments with the COVID-19 vaccine. For questions regarding other topics, please email them to the VDH Communications Office. Contact information is available at vdh.virginia.gov/news. Please remember to limit your inquiries to one question and one follow-up per person to allow time for everyone. Now we'll begin the question and answer portion of today's call. Operator?
If you'd like to ask a question at this time, please press star one and clearly record your name for question introduction. Our first question will come from Brett Hall. Your line is now open.
Hello, Dr. Avula. I wanted to clarify what you just said about vaccines mostly being sent by population, but also maybe supplementing those that aren't doing as well. Is there also a supplementation for those that have extra needs? I saw that Purdue Farms put out a release this week that they're working with VDH to begin vaccinating the upwards of, 3,000 employees that work in the chicken plants up there?
We are doing kind of specific allocations when there are high priority minority residents or elderly minority residents. So an example might be down in Danville last week, we had a great partnership between the health department and the NAACP where we were able to vaccinate over 800 elderly African-American residents. And so, again, those decisions are really going to be made on data-driven priorities, right? We know that our 65 and over population is absolutely highest priority. We also know that African-Americans and Latino residents have significantly 2 to 4 times higher rates of both hospitalization and death. And so there is a reserve of vaccine that goes to fund those types of initiatives. I know there was some discussion between the allocation team and the Purdue factory on the Eastern Shore. My understanding is that they had worked through their demand for 1B. And so as you start to work down the 1B tiers, if you go to the VDH website, and you can see where that takes you. So the food and agriculture is the next bullet there. So police, fire, hazmat, corrections and homeless shelters, child care, and K-12. And so they asked, can we go ahead and progress to the next tier? So I don't know that that's an additional allocation. I can check on that with our allocation team. But I think that was more a request to progress through their essential worker tiers.
Thank you. And the other question having to do with the new system for pre-registration, will this only have you signed up for allocations that are using the pre-registration system? So, for example, if a private provider is getting vaccine from a local health department but is not using the pre-registration method, would you still have to inquire separately?
Yeah, so for providers that are giving vaccine not in conjunction with the health department, so CVS would be a good example of that, those will all run through separate registration processes. Any providers that are working in conjunction, because how it's working in many places is that the health department orders vaccine for specific providers for specific purposes. So an example might be a health department partners with a local pharmacy and says, local pharmacy, you are going to provide vaccine to child care workers, and you're going to do those for individuals off of our list. And so that's probably the primary way this is happening right now throughout the state. But there are more and more situations where, like CVS and like some of the health systems that have their own registration processes. And so those wouldn't come from the pre-registration list that the health department are doing.
Thank you.
Our next question will come from Sabrina Marino. Your line is now open.
Hi, thanks so much for this. One of my first questions is, so Biden announced that, there's this intended push that there's, 200 million vaccines that will be added into the reserve. And I was wondering how soon, or if Virginia knows, how soon would that reach us? How soon would it affect Virginia?
Yeah, Sabrina, we get a weekly allocation, and what we're told is that allocation will hold for at least 3 weeks, or at least it won't get lower for at least 3 weeks. The federal government is kind of using different pathways to distribute that vaccine into states. So there's the core state allocation we get, which is this week 130,000 new first doses. But then there's also the federal pharmacy partnership. So the 26,000 doses coming to CVS. We've heard that in 3 to 4 weeks, they're going to start phasing in other retail pharmacies. I don't have any sense of what that volume will look like. But I would expect that, the other large chains like Walmart and Walgreens and Publix and Giant and Safeway will start to join that retail pharmacy partnership and bring additional vaccine in. Also, the White House announced this week that a separate federal allocation will be going to federally qualified health centers. And so they announced 1 million new doses for FQHCs across the country. FQHCs are federally subsidized primary care providers that exist to provide holistic primary care to the un- and underinsured. And so there are a number throughout Virginia. I was told yesterday that Virginia won't be included in the first phase. We're trying to better understand why and how that decision was made. But likely what it means is that a week out, we'll have a few FQHCs that get onboarded into that program. And so the rest of it really depends on how the production goes with Moderna and Pfizer, and then the timeline for the introduction of Johnson & Johnson and AstraZeneca, and then potentially Novavax down the road. Johnson & Johnson has submitted their application for authorization. That decision is due to be made on February 26th. And so our hope is that first week of March that brings new vaccine into the supply line, and then the Moderna and Pfizer production will just continuously increase over the course of the next couple of months. So the only other sightline I have is what we're hearing out of the federal government, that by April, that most everybody who wants vaccine should have access to it, but we haven't seen numbers shared with what that specifically means for Virginia.
Yeah, and my last question, local health districts have been left to build their own interest forms while awaiting the centralized portal, and, you know, also left to figure out what prioritization looks like, which varies depending on the locality, you know, and of course that has led to a disconnect between local and state. Do you expect that having that, you know, state registration system will kind of ease some of that disconnect, and what are the efforts to kind of, you know, close that connection between local and state EDH?
Yeah, you know, in the beginning of this, the role of scheduling vaccination events and you know, populating those vaccination events really were parsed out to the localities, right? The local health departments were driving a lot of that. It made sense, particularly on the scale that we were talking about. It made sense for them to be scheduling the events and planning the events. When we moved into 1B and really massively shifted the supply-demand curve, that clearly overwhelms all of us. I mean, the local, the state, the entire country. And so what we have done in response to that is to create this more centralized process. And it allows us to have consistency, to kind of follow the guidelines that we're crafting at the state level, but there's still got to be local flexibility, right? And I think, like Brett's question earlier about the workers in the Purdue font, right? Like, in a particular community, you're going to move through your demand at different rates, and different segments of our state are going to have different desire for the vaccine, and so we've got to allow some local flexibility in that. I think the same is true for the like 16 to 64 population with underlying conditions. This has been a really tough one, right? Because that is a large number of Virginians, and when you look at the CDC guidance around this, there are two categories. There are conditions that do put you at increased risk. Or the technical language, I think adults of any age with these conditions are at increased risk, and it lists a whole group of conditions. And then there's a second tier that says the following conditions might put you at increased risk. And the way that the CDC intended and the way that Virginia has adopted, like, all of those people technically fall into 1B, but there's no, like, it's really difficult to create an algorithm that is specific enough to say, hey, a 45-year-old who's in remission from cancer versus a 60-year-old with lupus, or, you know, a 52-year-old recovering from a ruptured aortic aneurysm versus a 60-year-old who has a BMI of 41, right? Like, we just don't have the science or the ability to assign a risk order criteria. And so there's got to be some room on the ground for providers to make decisions about which types of underlying conditions do we push to the front of the line and which types of conditions do we ask to wait. And this is a hard place for America, right? Like, we've never really been in a place where we've had to ration a scarce resource. And functionally, like, that's where we are right now. We have a very limited resource in vaccine, a very large number of people who want it, and we've got to use guidelines and our best judgment to try to meet individuals with the highest risk.
Our next question will come from Carol Vaughn. Please state the name of your affiliation before asking your question. Your line is open.
Hi, I'm with the Eastern Shore Post, and we're having a lot of calls come into our office from people that own, like, second homes, vacation homes on Chincoteague, which is a resort area, and they're asking about healthcare providers here, you know, and getting their shot here, even though their main home is out of state. And then someone also contacted us today and says he knows Maryland residents who are just, you know, to the north of us here, who've already received both shots in Virginia. Is the health department have any protocol for weeding out people coming from other areas to get their vaccinations here?
Yeah, I wish we did. Here's what we're doing. And part of this is really dictated by the federal guidelines, right? This is a federally funded resource. The feds are pretty clear that regardless of place of residence or citizenship or anything that ties you to any location, none of those things should be barriers to getting vaccinated. What we've tried to do in our health department run clinics and in the guidance we've provided providers who are receiving vaccine is to provide vaccine to individuals who qualify into 1B based on their age or based on their underlying condition. Like, those folks should go to the locality that they reside in. And so I guess as you're parsing out, is it your first or second residence? I would say first residence, but everybody obviously is going to try to find the quickest way to vaccine. But if you qualify in 1B by age or underlying condition, it's where you live. If you qualify in 1B by your employment status, by your essential worker status, then your vaccine will come through closed pods that health departments are setting up with your employers. And so that would be through where you work. There are also a number of situations where people have gotten their first dose in another state and are coming back into Virginia and trying to get their second dose. Sometimes that float happens from district to district. What we are really encouraging everybody to do is get your second dose at the place you got your first dose. And this will be made better as we get into the practice of scheduling your second dose appointment at the time of your first dose. Providers have started doing this. I think there was a lot of hesitation to do this early on because they just weren't sure what they were going to get from the federal government, if they were going to get those second doses. I think we had some negative experiences very early on where health systems who were receiving large amounts of vaccine made appointments a week or two out, and then when capacity to vaccinate grew around the state, those health systems had to cancel appointments because they weren't getting what they had the first 3 weeks. And so I think that experience, among others, has led to some hesitancy to go ahead and schedule second dose appointments. But what we have clearly communicated throughout, and what I think we've now seen reassurance around, is that the federal government has delivered on every second dose that Virginia is due. And so we've really, again, just reiterated the need to schedule that second dose appointment at the time of first dose. This will get better moving forward, but that there are going to be extenuating circumstances where somebody got their first dose somewhere else. They're here in Virginia now, and we need to make sure they get their second dose.
Thanks.
Our next question will come from Carl Willis. Please state the name of your affiliation before asking your question. Your line is now open.
For those seeking a vaccination, but there could be a delay now. Can you kind of explain why there wasn't more notice given to the public before closing these pre-registration forms?
I think we're working through the process of building out the tool. We why there wasn't no notice for the public. Unfortunately, not much changes, Carl, right? Because the line, like what you're doing when you pre-register is that you're getting in line for an upcoming event, right? And right now, these lines are tens of thousands of people long. There's really no practical impact for individuals to not be able to access this for 48 to 72 hours. And it makes sense in terms of moving to a centralized process that we would just have a couple days of downtime to integrate the data and then move smoothly with a coordinated central launch. So, I don't think this should cause much concern for the public, again, because, you know, whether you entered your name on Friday or enter it on Tuesday, there's still, unfortunately, thousands of people ahead of you, and that's the reality of where we are right now with supply.
Thank you.
Our next question will come from Amy Knowles. Please state the name of your affiliation. Your line is now open.
Hi, Dr. Avola. This is Amy Knowles with the Dogwood, and thank you for taking our questions. Mine is, are there any projections on when areas that don't have one, like, say, Southwest Virginia and South Richmond, for example, when they might get a dedicated COVID-19 vaccine site? And I was just curious about what all goes into that process.
Yeah, thanks, Amy. So I think when you talk about a dedicated site, I think you're probably referring to like the fixed site community vaccination centers that we've talked about along the way. And I think, you know, the planning is still ongoing for those. But the reality is we don't have enough supply to feed those fixed sites on a regular basis. And so the National Guard are making their way back to Virginia March 1st now. The plan initially will be to have them staff some of the large sites that are currently happening around the state, and then we'll evaluate our ongoing need for those based on vaccination supply, right? So if we get a ton of supply, a ton of increase in our supply in April or May, then it may make sense for us to open up those large-scale vaccination sites. But we kind of have to stay nimble with that decision because expending the time, energy, and resource to stand up these mass vaccination sites, like if we've already turned the corner on our supply demand, that may not be needed. Like we have already proven that we have tremendous capacity to just get vaccination out at large scale, right? We've had multiple days where we've logged over 50,000 doses in a single day. And so through the channels we have, through health departments, health systems, pharmacies, and private providers, we have the ability to get vaccine out at scale. So I think it's like finding the sweet spot of how much vaccine are we getting in and is there enough demand that we need to meet quickly, and we just don't know the answer to that. All we can do is plan and be ready to pull the trigger as supply gets there.
Wonderful. Thank you so much.
Our next question will come from Scotty DePivo. Please state the name of your organization before asking your question. Your line is now open. Please check your mute button. Your line is open. Our next question will come from Alice Sandra Lays. Your line is now open. Please state your organization.
Yes, I am with ABC 13, and thank you so much for taking our questions. So is there any mechanism that you guys are working to create wait lists for people to be notified if a person cancels their vaccine appointment so they can try and schedule one themselves?
Yeah, so I think providers are handling this in different ways. I was on an email thread this week about what CVS's policy is going to be. They are creating wait lists so that they can call people. I have talked to provider groups across the state that have done that as well, that when they get vaccine, they're also developing wait lists. You know, by and large, this for the mass events, this is not really an issue because the show rates are extremely high, and then there's enough volunteers and staff that you can turn to vaccinate at the end of an event. It's really more of an issue in smaller clinics where, you know, you open a vial and you get through and you have 2 to 3 doses left at the end of a day. So, you know, obviously everybody's doing their best to schedule every single appointment, and then each individual provider is developing a wait list system so that we can minimize waste.
Absolutely. And my last question is, can you walk people through a timeline of when we expect more vaccines to come in and where people can get their vaccine if CVS and their local health departments are booked up?
Yeah, well, right now there aren't a lot of options, right? Most of the appointments are coming through health departments, CVS, and then the various providers that are working in a coordinated way with health districts. So when is that going to change? I think that we are seeing small increases in vaccine every week. It is really allowing us to more aggressively get to those highest risk 1A individuals that we haven't gotten to yet, and then to continue to really be focused on our elderly and minority populations. What I'm hearing is kind of March, April, we should expect to see bigger jumps in vaccine. Again, the prospect of Johnson & Johnson coming online the first week of March, AstraZeneca likely in April, Novavax maybe somewhere in a similar time frame. And so I think it's going to be at least 6 weeks before we see, at least 3 weeks before we see a big bump in vaccine availability. But the federal government is saying that, you know, by April, there should be pretty ready access through multiple channels for everybody who wants to be vaccinated.
Thank you so much.
Operator, are you there?
Our next question will come from Elisa Sowers. Your line is now open. Please state the name of your affiliation before asking your question.
Hi, Dr. Avula. This is Alicia from the Virginian Pilot. Can you hear me?
Hi, Alicia.
Hi. Sorry, I just wanted to get clarification again on the centralized pre-registration system. So it sounded like this is a temporary downtime over the long weekend for the local pre-registration. My previous understanding of this was that this centralized system would be supplementing what local health departments are doing in terms of pre-registration, but not to necessarily replace it. But could you clarify, is this just a temporary downtime for the local pre-registrations and then they can resume on Tuesday, or no, everybody is going to the centralized system?
Yeah, the reason for the downtime is to integrate the data stream so that nobody who has registered already will lose their place in line. But the goal is that integration happens and that the local tools, right, like a lot of health districts are using a REDCap database or a Google form or, you know, various ways to capture the data. And so what this state tool will do is integrate all of those, timestamp them so nobody loses their place in line, and deduplicate any lists that get entered into there. And then on Tuesday, everybody will have a standard form that feeds into the list. But, you know, each health district will keep their particular list, right? So while it will be on a new platform, they will still be managing their local list. Does that clarify?
I hate to belabor the point, but so for example, if you have one particular county that has been using their own form, you go to their website, you fill out that form, and you submit it. Will that form still exist, or they're just going to redirect you to the centralized pre-registration system?
No, they should be able to go back to the same site on their county website, but it will be a link to the state form. So the form will change, the process will not.
The form will change, the process will not. Okay, and so when are we going to know what that web link is and what the centralized call center phone number will be?
That will be launched midweek next week at the governor's press conference.
Okay. Thank you.
No problem.
And our next question will come from Lola Davula. Your line is now open. You may ask your question. Please state the name of your affiliation.
Hi, this is Lola Fadulu with the Washington Post. Could you just say a little bit more on how exactly the statewide pre-registration system will be better than what currently exists?
Yeah, I mean, the primary thing is that someone will actually be able to answer the phone and walk you through the process, right? So some health departments have built the capacity to do that. Many have not. And really the need for the centralized process grew out of the reality that there was so much more demand than health departments could keep up with. So the improvements will be that you've got a centralized call center where someone can answer the phone, they can answer other vaccine-related questions, and then there will be consistency in the actual web form, right? They'll have consistent fields, similar applications for eligibility and prioritization across the state, because everybody answers the same questions at this point. And I think, you know, the fact that that has, you know, there's been some variability in the way those forms have been created, and most of them have aligned pretty well to the CDC and VDH guidelines, but not entirely. So, you know, I think the example of 16 and 64 underlying conditions has been interpreted in different ways in different districts. And so I think it creates a much more consistent application of the CDC and VDH guidelines. And then it also provides some deduplication, right? Because I think there were many situations where people have applied through different local health district forms, right? There's just such an appetite and such a hunger to get vaccinated that they are filling out every form they can. And so the deduplication process will really assign people to their appropriate district and thin out a lot of the forms that currently exist.
Thank you.
Our next question will come from Luann Rice. Your line is open. Please state the name of your affiliation.
Hi, it's Luann Rice with the Roanoke Times. And thank you for talking a little bit about the 16 to 64-year-olds with underlying conditions. You know, there's a question, I guess, about where they fit in the priority of things. Should they be getting vaccinated now at these MaxVax places, or should they be concentrating more on the elderly?
Well, the state guidance is that each locality is splitting at about 50-50, Luann. So 50% of your locality's allocation should go to the elderly. And that can happen at a mass vaccination site. That can happen in pharmacies. That can happen in provider practices. It really depends on, you know, how a particular health district has decided to allocate that vaccine and what segments of the vaccinating community will meet that need. The other 50% will go to those essential workers with 16 to 64 with underlying conditions worked in there. And that's, you know, obviously essential workers will capture some of that population just inherently. But for others who are 16 to 64, and especially, you know, this will be, you know, to the last reporter's question about, you know, what will be better about a centralized state pre-registration process, is that those questions will be asked consistently, and so then we'll have a clear idea of who has those underlying conditions and how should we prioritize them. It's still going to be really challenging, Luann. Like they, you know, to my earlier point about trying to write an algorithm that allows you to know who really is at higher risk among different types of underlying conditions, and so there will continue to be a need for local flexibility in making those determinations. But you know, I think for the public at large, I would really just encourage everybody to know who's at highest risk, right? There's no doubt that the 65 and older population are at significantly higher risk for hospitalization and death. And so, you know, I think there are extreme circumstances, that individuals who are immune suppressed or, you know, are currently receiving treatment for cancer. Like, there are a handful of really extenuating circumstances that ultimately are going to need to be decided at a local level. But, you know, for most of us who may be a little overweight or be hypertensive or have diabetes, like, those are not conditions that are going to result in hospitalization and death for the most part. And so we're going to try to use as data-driven a process as possible, but the folks providing the vaccinations on the ground are going to need the flexibility to make those decisions in real time.
Okay, thank you. And I had one other question, and it's on a different topic. All the different ways that doses are coming into Virginia now, I mean, you have the state allocation, you have the ones going to the FQHCs and the ones going to pharmacy partners. Is Virginia made aware of all of those doses coming in? I mean, are you reflecting that on, will you be reflecting that on the dashboard and also, you know, how many are getting into arms?
Yeah, so anybody who's vaccinated in Virginia, that information does map to our state database. And so all of that will be captured. There's one caveat to that right now, and we're working on this piece, which is that there are a number of people who are federal government employees or contractors who have been vaccinated through a separate federal allocation. And it's a pretty significant number. I mean, last time I checked, it was about 75,000 people, 75,000 Virginians who had been vaccinated through the federal government. So these are people who perhaps work at the VA or are military personnel in the Tidewater area or military or DOD or contractors up in the Northern Virginia area. So that's a significant piece that actually gets us further along in our goal to get Virginia vaccinated, but we're not yet seeing consistent reporting. We've asked for that for the federal government, and so they're working on consistent reporting that we will then build into our public-facing website.
Our next question will come from Kate Masters. Please state the name of your affiliation. Your line is now open.
Yes, thank you. I'm with the Virginia Mercury, and I guess I had a micro question. And the first was just whether you knew why Fairfax County is not going to be participating in the statewide registration system.
Yeah, you know, we spoke with them just a few hours ago. I think the county had they've worked really hard to build their own registration process, and for reasons that you'd have to ask them about, they weren't ready to make that transition. So we absolutely encouraged it. The Fairfax Health Department is not under the jurisdiction of the state, right? They're one of the ones that are independent integrated into their local government. It was a productive conversation. We absolutely hope they'll join soon. I think when they see the product roll out, I think it'll be a short while before they hop on as well.
Okay. And the sort of the macro question, you know, there's been more discussion recently about, you know, reaching herd immunity and whether that will be accomplishable with all the different vaccine streams that are coming in and the new variants, some of which affect the effectiveness of these shots. And, you know, some shots have lower total effectiveness than the Pfizer and Moderna. So I guess I'm wondering if state officials, A, you know, think that Virginia is still geared to reach herd immunity at some point in the future, and then B, have thought about what that might look like. Will we ever reach a stage where we're just not seeing cases of the disease, or are we anticipating that this will still be a part of our lives and, you know, there will be outbreaks from time to time, even as more and more people get vaccinated?
Yeah, I mean, we're certainly paying close attention to the variant situation, and I think, you know, the entire country and the entire world are in similar boats in the way that we approach this, right? We don't know what's to come. We know right now that we, in Virginia, we've got evidence of both the B.1.1.7 and B.1.351, so the UK and the South African variants. We also know that this has presented a really significant issue in other countries, obviously in the United Kingdom, but in other countries as well, where this has become the dominant strain very quickly. I was on the phone with colleagues in Israel last week who said that they're within 2 months of identifying their B.1.1.7 variant, it became their dominant strain, and they were reporting last week anywhere from 70 to 80% of their new infections were the UK strain. Our modelers down at the CDC expect that it will be the dominant strain here in the United States by the end of March. And this is, you know, certainly concerning on a couple fronts. One, we know that it looks to be more contagious, more infectious, but also that there's preliminary data now showing that it actually may cause more severe disease in the elderly. There's one paper, not peer-reviewed yet, but it looks like there's a slightly increased risk of hospitalization in those who are 55 and over. So we will continue to monitor that data around the country and adjust guidelines and recommendations as appropriate. And I think, you know, what it does mean for Virginia is we've got to double down on all of the core mitigation strategies, right, like the masking and distancing. And the sooner we get vaccinated, the sooner we'll be able to kind of move, particularly with the UK variant, because we know the vaccine still appears to be very effective against that B.1.1.7. The jury's still out on the B.1.351, and I know that Moderna, as one company, has started to develop a booster that would incorporate the B.1.351 strain. It's a constantly evolving situation. We're absolutely considering, paying attention to the data and factoring it into our strategy, but I don't think it changes anything right now about, one, our commitment to masking, distancing, staying home when you're sick, or two, trying to get vaccinated as quickly as we possibly can.
Okay, thank you.
And our next question will come from Barry Condrey. Your line is now open. Please state the name of your affiliation.
Yes, hello. Barry Condrey. I'm the Chief Information Officer for Chesterfield County Government. Hello, Dr. Avila. Thank you for taking our questions. We understand that the registration and scheduling tool, PrepMod, lacks the capability to send single-use registration links. And this allows people to forward PrepMod invitations for clinics to others via email, and they may not be on the intended audience list for the pod in question. Can you give us an update on when the one-time use links function will be available for PrepMod for early scheduling, when you bulk upload lists of people into PrepMod and then the links go out to the intended recipients?
Yeah, absolutely, Barry. So our leaning hard on PrepMod. We've clearly identified both the bulk upload issue and the ability to share single user links. And so really it's a fix that we're waiting on any day now. I'm hoping that sometime this weekend or early next week they will have provided a solution so that we have more control over the appointment registration process.
Hi, this is Maria Raffles, the Communications Director. Just a reminder, this phone call is for accredited press only. Thank you. Next question.
Our next question will come from Jonathan Swab. Please state the name of your affiliation before asking your question.
Hi, it's Jonathan Schwab from the News Gazette. Thanks for taking my question. I saw there were some issues with the CVS appointments filling up pretty early. I was just wanted to get you to tell me what has been done to address that.
We have zero control over CVS's process. I think any appointments that are open are going to go quick, right? There's a lot of people who want to be vaccinated right now. So what CVS is doing is they are opening up new appointments every few days, and that's how they're going to roll it out. And I imagine, what that means for people who are 65 and over in Virginia is that to the degree that they're able, they should get on the website or have somebody in their stead get on the website every morning and look for appointments. This is really one of the core issues that I have with CVS's process is that it does not allow equitable access, right? It does not take into consideration people who don't have internet access or who don't have the ability to wake up at 5 a.m. and try to sign up. And so, this is not a Virginia-specific problem. This is how CVS has rolled this out across the country. On a call last week with the National Governors Association, there were multiple governors who raised this concern. And so my hope is that nationally CVS will introduce other pathways for that really prioritize equitable access, but that is not the case currently.
Okay, thank you.
Our next question will come from Leanne Cicchetti. Your line is now open. Please state the name of your affiliation before asking your question.
Hey, Dr. Avula. It's Leanna Scicchetti with WDBJ7 in Roanoke. You talked a little bit about the benefits from the centralized system, particularly on the end of VDH, but I also wanted to understand it from the user end for the folks who are going to be signing up once it is fully up. So when they click on that link, are Virginians across the state going to be asked the same questions? And along with that, will they get some sort of physical confirmation? Because I've heard from a number of people who've called our newsroom and say, I think I signed up, but I don't know that I'm actually registered. So, and from the user end, will the form look identical for all Virginians, and will they get some sort of physical confirmation?
Leanna, I'm so happy you asked that question. I can't believe I forgot to mention that. So, yes, it will be a standard form across the state, but this is actually one of the most important and most valuable upgrades of having this standardized, consistent form, is that there will be a confirmation on screen when you actually put your information in the form, but you will also get weekly reminders that let you know, hey, you're still in the queue. We're still here. We're still working through our list, but you are still in the queue. And then you're also able to go at any time and do a status check to make sure that you're still in line, and you'll get a reference number that allows you to do that. So, gosh, thank you for asking that. And that, again, is one of the to one of the reporter's earlier questions. One of the other reasons that we really felt the need to have a standardized central system was that very few of the local solutions were able to provide that. And we just have heard that frustration from so many residents that I'm on a list, but I don't know if I'm actually there. And then they have to try to call and get in touch with somebody to check that status. So that will be one of the big upgrades here.
Great. And then my second follow-up question, you kind of talked about this with being a core issue with CVS. You feeling that it's not really allowing for equitable access. I know it seems like the main way that people, have been signing up with VDH has been online. I know they've had people call our newsroom and tell us they have a hard time getting VDH on the phone as well. I know you guys feel like the centralized system is going to help, but I think it's still an issue of access for a lot of older folks here in Southwest Virginia, folks who still don't have access to internet or don't have computers. I know VDH in some locations has said that they'll put hard copies outside the library or government offices. But how are you going to continue to increase access for folks at the state level who are not computer literate, don't have a computer, or don't even have internet?
Yeah, you're killing it with the questions today. This is great. So the other reason we are rolling out both a centralized registration form but also a centralized call center is to address exactly the issues that you've raised. So what will be coming next week is a central call center with 750 call takers. They will be in English and in Spanish. They will also have access to a third-party translation service in 100 different languages. So this really allows people who are non-English speakers, who don't have internet access, to call the centralized call center, to get walked through the process and actually pre-registered. And then there will also be an option for outbound calls and so we're still working through some of the protocols around how that will work, but this will address the issue of internet-only access. You're right that local health departments have used web forms for the most part, but Local health departments have also had phone lines and call centers in some areas that have tried to meet that need, but they have been overwhelmed. And so that, again, underscores the need for this central solution.
Thank you.
Our next question will come from Rick Massimo. Your line is now open. Please state the name of your affiliation before asking your question.
Hi, Rick Massimo from WTOP. Thanks for taking these questions. My big question is, how is this going to work as far as locality? I'm analogizing with the CVS situation. I've had people say, well, the closest CVS appointment I could get was 5.5 hours away, and I can't do that. And I've had other people say the closest CVS appointment I could get was 5.5 hours away, and that's annoying, but I can do it, so I'm going to do it. The centralized system, are vaccines still going to be administered locally? Are you still going to be waiting in a queue for your own health district, or can appointments be statewide as well as the registration process?
Yeah, thanks, Rick. And another one of my concerns with the CVS rollout is that it favors those who can be mobile, right? So you have people in parts of Northern Virginia who are willing to drive to Abingdon to get an appointment, and so we need to figure something out there. The way that the centralized state pre-registration system will work is that you will get assigned to your local health district, and so you don't need to figure that out. You just provide your address, and they map you to your health district. So you are getting in the pre-registry line for the place that you reside in. Again, if you qualify through 65 and up for underlying condition, and then it will be the place of your employment if you qualify through your essential worker status. So the pre-registration system doesn't change or impact the distribution strategy for localities. You just get in line in the appropriate local health district that you either live or work in.
Okay, and so, I mean, I guess at this point with supply, there isn't a question of, oh, we've got some, we've got some extra vaccine in Abingdon if you're willing to drive 5.5 hours. At the moment, that's not really, a question, a factor, or?
Yeah. That's correct, yeah. The demand is intense in every part of the state, and so, through the pre-registration process, they're pulling off their lists of their residents.
And that'll affect the allotments for each county, I suppose.
How do you mean?
Well, I mean, number of people who sign up for a particular health district, that'll affect how much vaccine each health district gets, right? I mean, you'll be able to send the vaccine to places where people have, for a certain week, for people who have certain appointments that week, right?
Well, the pre-registration process will not impact the allocation strategy. So our allocation at this point, again, when we're only getting 130,000 new doses a week, the allocation is still primarily going to be on population. And there will be a point where you start to saturate demand in different parts of the state, and then you can move around the vaccine to as you're suggesting, move it around to the places that actually have appointments coming up. But we're still a long way from that state, right? Like every locality in Virginia has incredible demand right now, and so the primary mechanism for allocation is going to be per population.
Right, so this is not an issue yet.
Correct.
Okay, thanks.
Our next question will come from Tom LaFiz. Please state the name of your affiliation before asking your question. Your line is open.
Hi, Tom Lapis from the Henrico Citizen. Just wondering if you could clarify was there a plan all along to have a statewide registration system and call center, or were there not really part of the state plan until a few weeks ago when phase 1B began?
Sorry, you got a little muffled there, Tom. Could you repeat that?
Sure. I just wondered if there was a plan all along to have a statewide registration system and call center, or were those elements not part of the state's plan until a few weeks ago when Phase 1B began?
Yeah, we were certainly planning on more of a coordinated process, but later. We thought we had more time. Remember that in the beginning of the rollout, we didn't expect to be in 1B until into February. And so I think a lot of the need to move towards more flexibility in communities, the shift to 1B, and 1B, you'll remember 3, 4, maybe 5 weeks ago now, more than doubled in size when the federal government instructed states to add 65 and over and the underlying condition population. And so I think the need for these solutions definitely accelerated and became more complicated with that expansion. But the original, the original plan really relied on local health districts and local providers developing local solutions, and then we thought we had more time to plan out a statewide process.
Thank you. And then as far as from a local health district perspective, you mentioned obviously having a call center, there's benefits where local folks don't have to take calls or have concerns from folks who haven't gotten an email. But are there other ways that this will help local districts kind of relieve them of the burden in any way? I mean, is prioritization still going to happen at the local level, or will state officials be making those decisions now?
Absolutely. Prioritization will remain with the local level. All this does is create a standardized mechanism of input for the pre-registration list. The local health districts are still fully responsible for curating their list. So, for example, if they have a 1,000-person event for individuals who are 65 and over, they're going to pull from their from this list. So the state will not be doing the assigning of people. The localities will be doing that. The other way that it will be helpful is that in addition to pre-registration, the call center is equipped to just answer general questions about COVID. And so, I know for us in the Henrico Richmond Health District, our call center folks have been phenomenal. They've had to create a ton of knowledge over time that's constantly evolving. And so some of that burden will be removed off of local health districts. And then this functionality around outbound calls and language acceptability. So those are many of the ways that the centralized call center will help relieve the burden for local health districts.
Great, thank you.
Our next question will come from Connor Souvenirier. Your line is now open. Please state the name of your affiliation before asking your question.
Hi, this is Connor Scribner with BPM News. Looking at the state data for vaccines, we're seeing some pretty big differences between localities, even within health districts. So, for example, in the Crater District, between Dinwiddie and Greenville, Dinwiddie is about 3,500 per 100,000, where Greenville is at closer to 18,000 per 100,000. And I'm just wondering, what is behind those large differences within health districts?
Yeah, I talked earlier about our constant look at sort of the geographic equity lens, making sure that every locality, we try to get the rate of administration up in those communities. I think Crater is a large health district. It's got 8 different localities, but it's small by population. And so, it's going to be more difficult to sort of get there. But a couple of specific things. One, there are still some data reconciliations that need to happen. I know Crater, they did like 8 pods this past week for different segments of that community. And so I think those numbers will tick up. We also recognize because Crater is a fairly large district with a pretty underfunded local health department, we recognize the need to come alongside and build out additional capacity. And so, you know, when I was talking about that geographic and racial equity lens, that is a place where we will be directing more vaccines this week to help reconcile some of those differences.
All right, excellent. Thank you.
Hello, everyone. This is our five-minute warning before we end the call. We have time for one final question.
And our final question will come from Jimmy LaRue. Your line is now open. Please state the name of your affiliation before asking your question. Thank you.
Hi, Jimmy LaRue with the Suffolk News Herald. This is kind of dovetailing a little bit off of the previous question. In Western Tidewater, it's been hasn't received as much vaccine doses as districts of similar, even smaller sizes. And understanding that there's been a shift in the allocation process, the one that you're using that's more population-based, are there other factors that are determining an allocation to a health district at this point? And do you or have you already planned to tweak the allocation formula at all, you know, since, you know, you've rolled out this new one?
Yeah, Jimmy, thanks. I think the allocation formula is going to likely evolve week in, week out. There are, I would say, four primary considerations, maybe five, but even that will evolve, maybe even during this call. But primarily, it'll be the population of each locality, right? That's kind of the primary lens we're using to drive that allocation. But then we need to look at things like the weighting of the 65 and older population. So some parts of our state just have many older residents. And again, because we know their risk, we will get to a point where we're going to have to make decisions between do we send vaccine to a place with a bunch of younger population or do we weight the allocation for folks with more seniors. Two, Black and Latino residents. So we will need to, we're doing this already, not necessarily by formula, but more by opportunity, right? As providers and health departments and health systems partner with NAACP and congregations and other networks in their community to really get at those harder to reach populations, that we are prioritizing vaccine for those types of efforts. Three, hospitalization and death rates, and obviously those are kind of integrated or part and parcel of the African-American and Latino resident rates, and so figuring out exactly how to think about that and how much do we weight that. And then four, essential workers, right? There are places in our state, as Northern Virginia and Richmond are ones that immediately come to mind, but as you start to work through the essential worker populations, if we are sort of relying on the local health departments to do the people by employment, then there's going to be an undue burden on some communities to vaccinate more essential workers. And so we've got to look at that data and figure out how much that's impacting vaccination demand in different communities and use that to drive allocation as well. So it's a work in progress. Those are the major factors we're looking at. What I'd like to try to do is to get that into more of a formula, but really so much of it depends on weekly supply that will kind of morph from week to week. But I think as long as people know what are the factors that we're taking into consideration and how heavily are we weighting them, my hope is that local governments will you know have a sense of how this is playing out and what went into their allocation.
All right, thank you very much.
I want to thank everyone for joining our call today. There will be an audio recording posted on the VDH website, as well as a written transcript. You will be able to access these documents at vdh.virginia.gov/coronavirus/media-room. Once again, if we were unable to answer your question today, please email them to the VDH Communications Office. Thank you.